It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, ready and willing to get into a subject that you really excel at, and that is helping people with their marriages and marriage counseling.
Well, I hope I excel. It's tough sometimes. It's tough for people to change.
Well, that's kind of what we're talking about this week. What are some of the reasons that marriage counseling can be difficult and how to make it more beneficial?
Right. When people go for marriage counseling, you know, again, they want things to change pretty quickly. And people come in, just like going to the hospital, you know, you've got your ER and the ICU and all these, you know.
Would you ever have an ICU in one of your marriage counseling sessions or an operating room almost?
Well.
Sometimes.
So people come as individuals and, you know, they come in these different conditions, and marriages come in these different conditions too. People come, you know, when it's too late, you know. Mm. Usually, you know, I think I've said on the show before, if a man comes, because his wife has sent him, she's usually been on him for quite a long time, and it's almost a little too late. Usually the gals come first, but sometimes marriages come for a tune-up, and then sometimes they come when they say we've tried everything else. Well, there are some things that are fundamentally problematic that any person that's done marriage counseling for any length of time will see that there are some types of situations, particularly, but frame of mind that people bring in to the counseling session that are really make it very difficult to move on. And when most people come for counseling or marriage counseling, our theme today, I think most of them would agree pretty quickly that the purpose of the counseling is change in some way. And that only makes sense. Things aren't working the way we've been doing them. We need to do them different. So one of the biggest problems, though, that I see in marriage counseling over the years is that for every two people that come up, one of the two people coming in for marriage counseling quite often thinks that it's the purpose of change is to change the other person,
right,
and not me. So
right.
So that's as I say, it's as likely as not one of the two believes that the change is just for the other person, and so every point that the counselor tries to make in that that whole process, it's dismissed by that one person because it's assumed that it's not really for me. It's not relevant for me. He's really talking to the other person. And sometimes I get about as point blank as I can be. You know, mm-hmm. It's difficult in marriage when you're doing a joint session because you have to be careful with the way that you handle people. You can't take the husband and really dress him down in front of the wife because more often than not, he might seem to comply on the surface. But when they get home, you hear, well, he really went after her on that, and that's it. He's not coming back to counseling. So you have to keep people in this almost like fishing. I'm not a fisherman, but I've heard the fisherman's stories. You get the hook kind of set, and then you have, if you're big fish, you have to tire the fish out. So you got to give them some line and let them swim a bit, but not too much. You know, it's kind of like that in counseling. You have to keep people in the process, and sometimes it can seem to the person that's getting beat up in the relationship like I'm going too easy on the other person. And when I'm just trying to keep the person in the process long enough for them to invest in it, you know. And so, or it seems like in a session that I've heard people say it seems like you're just talking to me. I'm the only one that needs to change. But sometimes you have to move one before the other can move. So there's lots of different things. So again, the problem of people thinking the change is just for the other person. It's the other person that's got the problem. That other person needs to change, not me. And usually the person who believes that is the one that's responsible for probably the bulk of the problems. Mm. Or they might say, well, I know I have a problem. But, you know, that's who I am, and that other person just needs to adjust, you know, get
that's
over
just
it.
The way
yeah,
I
just,
am.
Yeah, that's just the way I am. So once again, I admit I have the problem, but the conflict is your fault because you're not accepting me as who I am. Mm. That's another way that it comes down. Mm-hmm. So again, the problems then just tend to repeat. They just repeat, and sometimes they even get worse. And then the spouse or the counselor are generally blamed for the failed mission. And then sometimes that's the end of the counseling process. The one person just withdraws from it. Mm. So that's a problem that people need to be aware of. A man came to me one time. Some of these things you never forget. And his wife had come a number of times, and finally she got him to come, and she was warning me, you know, he's going to be difficult, I think. So he came in, and then, you know, the first thing the counselor sees is the way a person sits down, because when you sit down just about anywhere, in a doctor's office or seminar or whatever, your posture pretty much always says, this is who I am.
Okay.
And so when a person comes to counseling, the first thing that counselors might look at is, how does the person sit? You know, like, so I've had men that stretch their legs and their arms out, and it's like, you know, okay, this is who I am. I have require a lot of territory or something like that along those lines. So the way he sat, I could tell, you know, but then the first words out of his mouth, he said, I want to start off by telling you there's nothing you can say to me that you can't teach me anything that I don't already know. And so
that's how he started.
That's the way he started. And so I agreed. I said, I think you're probably right. And of course that didn't go off too well. Another barrier is, the problem is probably more the case, too, is that the couple verbally will both embrace the idea of change, and they may even admit faults to the root problem, but they don't ever get around to changing. So they come and they repeat the complaint, or they'll bring in a different scenario to talk about. They don't actually get around to following directions and changing. There's probably a number of reasons for that. One of those might be that they don't really believe that meaningful change is possible. That could be because they are not used to making change in life. Sometimes people have grown up in a life that's been too stable and they're not used to change, or the opposite, you know, that not stable enough, and so they need the security. But for whatever number of reasons, they don't believe that meaningful change is possible. Maybe they've been in the relationship or had relationships that have failed. Their history of relationship just hasn't been good. They haven't received good counsel. They haven't received good modeling, and they just don't believe that change can occur. So they don't invest in the process. Another one would be maybe that they don't see the process when it's working. So it's actually they're actually following directions, but they give up because they don't see the process actually working, or they don't recognize the change. And this is possibly because of unrealistic or unreasonable expectations that aren't met. They expect that the change will look a certain way, and it maybe looks a different way. Or they don't recognize the change while it's in process. It's not quick enough. They maybe become impatient. Or they get distracted by what isn't happening, and they give up on what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times in marriage counseling, I have to bring people's attention to, well, has there been, you know, is Charlie changing? Well, you know, or is, you know, is Sue changing a bit? You know, do you see improvement? Well, yeah, well, you know, they get distracted by the things that aren't happening, and they don't reward the things that are happening, which is really fundamental in that.
Do you find people mostly come to you when they're kind of in a crisis mode, or do some people come for just kind of like a tune-up?
Usually in a crisis mode.
Usually crisis.
Some people, you know, it's not often, but sometimes people come and say, yeah, we just need a tune-up. And then sometimes, you know, sometimes they're not as well off as they think.
Mm.
There was a couple that came to me many years ago, and they had this idealistic kind of environment. I'm not exaggerating here. They drove up in his and her Jeeps. They each had a Jeep, and they each had like an Abercrombie. It was like they were like twins.
Mm.
They were, you know, Abercrombie Fitch cap and Jeeps, right, and stuff. And they came in, and they started right off telling me how much in love they were and how they didn't have any problems. But the problems, you know, as they talked over, you know, a few sessions, I could see that there were problems, that they were trying to be pretty, you know, Pollyanna about this and just putting a happy face on it. But that marriage, you know, she wound up having an affair, and then they wound up getting a divorce over that. But there were deep problems. They didn't realize. I think maybe they intuited that they had some problems, but they wanted to present for some reason as though they didn't. And so sometimes people come in for a tune-up. Sometimes when they come in for a tune-up, there's more. There are really issues.
But you say sometimes you see in some situations a kind of a lurking hatred going on. I mean, these couple of people in front of you just hate each other.
Yeah, I say that that's maybe a unfortunate and more often than you'd ever like to see. But in the absence of agape, and so this is one of the things that we talk about, agape. Or if you get into any counseling, major counseling program or marriage counseling program, it really comes down to ways of meeting one another's needs. Any counselor will get around to that. They'll start working with the process, and people will actually present those very words: "My needs aren't being met." And so, well, what are your needs? And I think there's even a book out there and a whole approach: His Needs, Her Needs. And so a lot of that counseling is about meeting one another's needs, or that is, in other words, serving, caring, other awareness, or our favorite word, agape. So it really is. So the troubling thing is that in the absence of agape, there is this kind of a lurking hatred underneath that I've noticed as we were talking before the show that for whatever reason, when couples begin to resist this process of change and this kind of this, when they resist this shift toward agape or serving or other awareness, and they remain in their self-centeredness, and the other person's got to change, and I'm, you know, I am who I am, and that's what I'm comfortable being. At some point in the process, they have this kind of a quasi cooperative surface, and they're somewhat agreeable on the surface, and it's about the issues. They want to solve the issues, but then I'm left to wonder if you really want to solve the issues, why do the issues never get solved? Something underlying, and eventually something will come out. And I've seen people just get so angry at one another, just yelling at one another with the veins showing on their neck. They're just, and it's like, you know, hatred is the only word that describes it. You know, that underneath this, you know, it's like I say, this kind of like superficial or facade of agreeableness and, you know, that there's just this, and it just erupts like like a volcano, like it's something that was always there. And again, you know, in the absence of agape, this thing, and I want to spend a little time after the break here we're coming up on, just a few minutes just talking about how dangerous that is. Very dangerous.
But also looking at some ways to make marriage counseling beneficial, yes. Of course, too. Always great answers, Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. If you need some marriage counseling, you want to get into some counseling before you get into some hatred in your marriage, or maybe you feel that kind of lurking, you want to get some help. People, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you will also find these radio shows in the podcast.
Okay, and offices in
Kirkland and Edmonds. Thank you.
Kirkland and Edmonds. Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland and Sound Mind this week, looking at the subject of marriage counseling. what goes wrong, what can go right. And you wanted, though, to kind of continue a little bit on this, this idea of if it has devolved into kind of a simmering hatred, this is a dangerous place.
Yeah, and of course, the they say that the seeds of destruction the seeds of destruction are sown at the beginning of the marriage, too. You'll find those things there. Of course, people typically don't recognize the selfishness and self-centeredness and the relational distances we've talked about. But this thing of hatred, and hatred is a good word for it. I don't think that's a word that married couples would like to use.
No.
Because I think that there's something so ominous about that, and I think that we're frightened of that word. But yet, there's not a better word to describe some of the stuff that is seething underneath this surface of it's kind of a facade of agreeableness and quasi-cooperativeness. But I wanted to go a little bit into hatred and just talk about how dangerous it is, because, you know, hatred really is the opposite of agape, and it's the stronghold of ungodliness. And it's actually the very nature of Satan. I just want to take a little bit of a scenic route here for a second. You know, there's a doctrine out there, universal doctrine, where basically nobody stays in hell very long. They just get a slap on the wrist, and then they love God because they hate fire, kind of a thing. And I think what the universalists have really overlooked is the ability of man to hate. The ability of man to develop a hatred to the point where they hate God and hate his goodness.
Mm.
And I think that's the piece they're leaving out, that we are capable of hating God and hating his goodness. And this is where it starts. There's that part in the Bible where they're talking about after Satan is bound up and people will look on him and say, is this the one that troubles the nations? And you know, what I get from that is that we like to blame Satan, the enemy, for all of the troubles. But what the Bible seems to say is, you know, you humans, you're capable of evil on your own.
Very
and you're capable
so.
Of hatred yourself. But there's this scripture in Matthew 5:22, you know, the familiar one where Jesus said, you know, if you, and I'm going to paraphrase it here because I don't have the actual text here, but it's Matthew 5:22, and it's basically, if you're provoked, be careful because you're in danger of the judge. If you're contemptuous, and they say if you call your brother Raca, or if you're contemptuous, then you're in danger of the council. But if you say to your brother, you fool, you're in danger of hellfire, Gehenna.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. Now,
that was kind of surprising. Pretty strong condemnation there for that. I said, what's he? Why is he?
Yeah, and
this?
I was disappointed in a lot of the Bible studies I found online because they went into this thing about, well, you know, the word fool means, and they're totally missing it. I was reminded of my mother used to say, I don't give a tinker's damn. Now that was a way of having permission to swear without making God mad because the dam was spelled D-A-M. The tinker's dam is where the plumbers used to wrap, or maybe they still do, used to wrap an area with putty so that they could fill it with solder, and then once they'd used that putty, they had to throw away so it wasn't worth anything. So they'd say a tinker's dam, D-A-M, isn't worth anything. She would say, I don't give a tinker's damn, you know, and so that was my wife and I used to, get upset, you know, somebody would say the word damn, and the other person would say, did you spell that with an N? Because if you did, okay. God is going to be really upset. So what I'm trying to point out here is kind of the silliness of thinking that Jesus was talking about the word fool. What he's talking about is a progression. If you're upset, if you're provoked, and the Bible says, don't let the sun go down on your provocation. If you're provoked, be careful. You know, you're in danger of the judge. If you're contemptuous, that's a kind of a progression of this thing. If you're contemptuous, be careful. Now you're in danger of the council. If you say you fool, and what he's getting at is the condition of the heart. Now we're talking about hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, you're in danger of hellfire. Why? Why? Because hatred is the nature of Satan.
Mm.
And it's where this starts. And so hatred's not something to play around with. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are fundamental to successful counseling and complete marriage and a and the goal and the objective.
Okay.
Now, it seems that God is, in creating us in his image, he's gifted men one way and women another way. That is, I often speak of the masculine and the feminine versus male and female because, you know, men are obviously different in their bodies and women in their bodies. That's male and female. The masculine-feminine thing is more of a continuum. So you have men that are wrestlers and men that are florists, and you have women that are truck drivers and women that are homemakers, you know, so you've got, so there's more of a continuum there. But generally speaking, God has gifted, men in one way and women with another way. And, kind of pursuant to our sinful nature, though, we tend to use these unique, generic, specific giftings to leverage dominance one over the other. To counterbalance that, God's given men one assignment and women another assignment to counterbalance that idea that men can use their strengths to leverage a dominance over women. Women can use their strengths to leverage dominance over. So in Ephesians 5, you know, Paul is talking about men dying and women submitting. Now, dying has to do with the value of the woman. When Christ died, he put a value on the church. When Adam died to God creating Eve, there was a value placed on Eve. And when God tells the husband to lay down his life, he's telling him, he's giving him an idea of the value he must put on the woman, that you lose your life for her. That's the value you place on her.
Yes.
The submission talks about the trustworthiness or the worthiness of the man. Now, a man doesn't have to, by his nature, he's not maybe inclined to value the woman because, you know, it's the man's world, and when we were cavemen, we were the ones that went out and brought back the meat, and et cetera, et cetera. Neither does the woman have to necessarily find the man worthy of devotion. I know in my marriage, my wife could find a lot more reasons to scratch her head at my behavior than to be in awe.
Right.
And so, so God has told the man, "You're to die for her." That assigns her the value that I want her to have. And he's saying to the woman, "You're to submit to him as the Lord and be obedient to him." And so it takes us, it counterbalances the way that God has gifted us. And those giftings, of course, are to bring us to a place of agape and a place of deeper humanness. So those are things that we need to keep in mind. Now, just kind of closing comments here. Change isn't easy, but the process is generally pretty straightforward when, you know, people come in. I can give them assignments and I can point out to them, these are the things that have to change in the way that you communicate, in the way that you think about one another, in the way that you think about, you know, your relationship with God and your commitment to you know, this institution of marriage. So I can point out things that should things in the process that should change. It's not easy, but it's pretty straightforward, and the alternative is not good. So, you know, when we cooperate with God and we trust his counsel, and hopefully the counselor is giving godly counsel, and if your counselor isn't giving godly counsel, there are a lot of counselors that are giving godly counsel, and that's the one that you should seek out. But if we cooperate with God and we trust his counsel to bring about good, then we often won't see the change that we anticipated. Because his ways aren't our ways, and he's trying to bring us to, you know, to perfection. And it's not often the case that our idea of what needs to be done is the same as God's idea of what needs to be done.
Hmm.
We'll often arrive somewhere other than the place that we had in mind. And I think that's one of the things that frustrates people sometimes in the change is that they're not going the direction that they think they want to go or they think they ought to go. But again, with godly counsel, that's where we will arrive at that place, although it's as likely as not, probably more likely than will not be the place we had in mind. But it will be the place that we belong, will be the place that we're intended, and the best place for us, the best place for the marriage. I think that we've got our minds, a lot of us have got our minds on some sort of an expectation. Marriage is for me. Marriage is to make me better. Instead of realizing that marriage is God's program. Marriage doesn't belong to me. My marriage doesn't belong to me. My marriage belongs to the Lord. It belongs to the church. And so that cooperating in that is the way that we bring about God's purpose, not holding on to our own. So that is kind of a synopsis. Again, this material is going to be at the podcast, so people can go.
You actually have a number of podcasts on the subject of marriage.
I do, and yeah. Next week we're actually going to talk a little bit more. I'm going to revisit one that I've done before on the personality types or personalities and personality conflict in marriage, which will tie into this a lot.
Okay, if people are intrigued, they maybe need some marriage counseling themselves, or maybe they know somebody who needs marriage counseling, maybe have been married a couple of years and they're seeing some problems. How do they get in touch with you for some help?
Yes, call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through my website. Again, you'll find these radio shows, about 2.5 years or maybe a little more in radio shows there at the podcast. Also, refer to another website, ChristianCounselorsForum.com, where there are some good articles on these same topics. Offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor and the Sound Mind broadcast here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.